Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 291, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. As always, I am Chris Featherstone. Follow us on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. I am really, really excited about this week's guest for tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, he is one of the best cruiserweights in professional wrestling history, but I think for him, he just wants to be known as one of the best wrestlers in professional wrestling history. Yes, he has made his mark throughout his career in the cruiserweight division, but he has also made his mark as a legendary professional wrestler. I present to you tonight none other than the Hurricane Shane Helms. How are you tonight, sir?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, man. I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight.
Oh, no problem.
Man, so let's go all the way to your WCW Stomping Grounds, three count. There's a lot of things that cause you to be really cemented as one of the best cruiserweights of all time. Of course, Gregory Helms when you were in WWE. But it goes even further back there. It goes to three count. It goes through your time in WCW. I know that a lot of people have some issues with WCW. I know it's the kind of it's the cool thing to do to criticize WCW because a lot of people do it. But you have different types of thoughts. I've listened to some interviews beforehand as well and just done some digging on just your thoughts on WCW. You have different you have a different perspective. You didn't really have any issues with it, correct?
Yeah, I didn't have any bad times. Like, you know, I mean, keep in mind, I'm probably a little bit more positive than 95% of people in the business. I can be annoyingly positive, but you know, I kind of just anything that was bad, I didn't really focus on too much. I had a great time there. It opened me up in terms of exposure to the world.
Yeah.
My time in WCW did, and I mean, I just took that opportunity and ran with it. And I had a lot of good times. You know, any of the bad stuff that you might hear about the guys talking about, I just didn't focus on it. You know, I wasn't in any corporate meetings or behind the doors decision making meetings, so there was no need for me to worry about anything that was going on behind the scenes. The only thing I could control was what I did up there in the ring. So that's all I focused on.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, that was nearly 20 years ago. But in 2001, of course, the invasion happened about 16 and a half years ago. and a lot of people came over from WCW. But I think one of the biggest things that I think a lot of people do agree with is that a lot of the heavy hitters of WCW did not go over during the buyout, and they just kind of sat on their contract or just went elsewhere. You have like the Stings, the Hogans for a while before he eventually came over. But you had some of the biggest star players of WCW that did not go immediately to the WWE, especially during the Invasion era. Goldberg as another big name during the Invasion era. Do you think that that was one of the biggest reasons why that type of angle that had so much potential end up flopping in the end?
You know, I mean, without a doubt. I mean, it did flop. It made money. So anything that makes money, I don't know if you'd call it a flop. Could it have been a lot better? Without a doubt, it could have been a lot better. But, you know, we didn't bring the varsity team. You know, if you want to talk about, I mean, we didn't bring the true power of the NWO, like, right away, like the Invasion. You know, I mean, I think the first thing was Lance Storm coming in,
yeah,
and then Booker coming in, you know, and of course, those are two world-class talents. But they weren't the top guys in WCW at the time. It wasn't the Goldberg. It wasn't the Stings. You know, it wasn't the Hogans right away. And that's what you needed in terms of, when we're going head to head, you know, you bring your heavy hitters. You know, I always tell people it's like a Super Bowl, but then one team brings in, you know, their whole like starting lineup doesn't show up for whatever reason, and you got to play the second string.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a lot of good moments that came out of that, and it gave a lot of good talents, you know, a chance to present themselves to the WWF audience.
Mm-hmm.
Myself being one of them, because WWF audience didn't know who the hell Sugar Shane was. You know, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, they gave me an opportunity, and it was what it was. I think they did the best of it that they could. But, and I also want to point out, too, the WWF top guys at the time, Undertaker, Kurt Angle, Shawn Michaels, Triple H, all these guys, I mean, that is a roster that would not have been beaten by any other roster ever.
All-stars.
You know, you got to look in, yeah, I mean, WWF, their top guys had it going on. They could go out there, they could talk, and they could work, and they worked hard. And I mean, they were just kind of, especially at that time, they were outworking the top tier of WCW.
Yeah,
the matches were just better. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you, I mean, you had a really, really good run in WWE, especially as Gregory Helms, and you know, being one of the most successful cruiserweight champions, or probably the most successful cruiserweight champions of all time. It was a 10-year gap between, you know, the cruiserweight division that you were familiar with and just the revitalization of it after the Cruiserweight Classic and now 205 Live. I did hear some I was a part of a conference call a few months back, and, you know, there was some talent that said that were formerly at Impact. One person in particular, he said that one of the biggest differences that he noticed within like the X Division and 205 Live is that 205 Live just kind of they do too much of really just kind of pigeonholing people, and there's not really a lot of dynamic within the 205 Live. I know that, you know, we've talked off air before, and we were discussing as far as just having some more star power in the division, like a Finn Balor, like an AJ Styles. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, definitely that's what would spice that division up. I mean, it doesn't have the star power that the main roster does, or not the main roster, but the other, you know, outside of 205 Live. I don't even know if the other roster has a name in terms of that. I mean, if somebody really gets big in the 205 division, they're going to take them out. And that sends a message to the audience that this division isn't as important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's notorious to them that they never seem to be able to capture the magic of how it happens in, like, say, MMA or boxing. And if you look at MMA and boxing, I mean, their biggest stars are guys that are, you know, 30, 40 pounds smaller than me.
It's true.
You know, and WWE has struggled with that. And I'm not talking about just using small guys, but using small guys in that cruiserweight division against another guy. They've done great things, obviously, with myself, Rey Mysterio, AJ Styles right now, Finn Balor. But imagine how great that 205 division would be if AJ and Finn Balor were in it.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to be presented as an important division, or else AJ and Finn Balor are not going to want to be a part of it. And I can almost assure you that right now they don't.
Yeah.
You know? if it's presented as second tier, you know, nobody wants to be on the B team. Nobody wants to be on the junior varsity. Everybody there wants to be, you know, on the main slot and be viewed as important. So the WWE really has to present it as important. And the guys themselves have to step up. You know, there's a lot of guys that are doing, they're just kind of, they look exactly like 40, 50 other guys I've seen on the indies. You know, there's not really any standout looks, no real standout personalities. Enzo, at least, is bringing attention.
True.
And that's what you need. I mean,
yeah,
that's what this business is about. It's about attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of the frustration, there are two guys this year that were reportedly frustrated just with their role and just kind of being relegated to the 205 division, which are Austin Aries and Neville. Both of them are no longer with the WWE. Of course, we know for sure Austin Aries, there's still some you know, things that are unconfirmed as far as Neville being completely gone, but you know, the general consensus that he is indeed gone. What are your thoughts on that, just as far as just, you know, I know that just being frustrated, I've talked to many people in the wrestling business who were previously WWE employees, and they were saying as far as just, I'd rather be, you know, gone and happy than in the WWE and miserable. Do you agree with that take?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, that's kind of what I mentioned to you when we talked earlier. Yeah, I mean, you only live once. So if you're miserable there, if he's indeed miserable, then leave. You know, go somewhere that makes you happy. And there's no other company in the world that's going to say no to Neville right now. He's incredibly talented, always has been.
Yeah.
You know, so if he's that miserable there, then sure, yeah. Well, I mean, why not? You know, me, I was different because, you know, I mentioned to you before, like, I had a talk with Steve Austin one time, and he was like, just mentioned how I always was a happy guy. And I was like, yeah, I never let it get to me. You know what I mean? And that's just how I am in life. You know, no matter what, I don't let things bring me down. I'll find the silver lining. Even if I got to work my ass off to find that silver lining, I'll find a way to get to it.
Mm-hmm.
And this business, I mean, like any job, everybody listening to this, your job is going to piss you off at some point. You know,
sure.
I'm sure this I did podcast years ago, and it would drive me nuts. You know, you got to find a way to make it happy. You got to find a way to make it good for you.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what it's about. If you're miserable, you know, change. If you,
yeah,
you can't expect the change to happen for you. You got to be the agent of change.
I agree. I agree with that very much. And being in the podcast business for 5.5 years, I've had a bunch of hurdles to overcome, but I thank God that people like
you. Lasted
you
lasted longer than I did. You lasted longer than I did. I checked out.
How long were you in podcasting?
I started in 2010. I probably did it for a year and a half. I would do seasons, what I would call it. I would do probably 15 weeks, and then I take a couple, you know, a month off or so, and then I come back. And, you know, but I was doing video too, so I would have a desk in my studio at home.
Yeah.
And we would stream it out live and really thinking outside the box and doing stuff, you know. But, like, when Austin called me asking me for advice on how to do a podcast, that's when I was like, yeah, I'm done. I'm not going to be competing with Steve Austin and Jericho and shit like that. But at the same time, it was a lot more work than I thought. It ain't just getting on there talking shit, talking, you know, jobs. You got to – there's a lot else that goes into it that people don't think, you know.
And
you wake up one day, and I know you've had this, you own almost 300 episodes now. You wake up one day, maybe you just don't feel like talking that day.
That's
guess
right.
What? You got a deadline.
That's
you got
exactly
a deadline.
Right.
You got to get that thing out.
Yes.
And I had sponsors too, you know, so they don't want to hear that I don't feel like talking that
right
day. They want that damn show out. So.
That's exactly right, man. I thank you for understanding that it's just not, you know, it's putting together a run sheet. It's making sure that you're adhering, making sure you cover every point. Because my show, I have weekly interviews from wrestling talent. And every single week I bring someone on the show, and sometimes it gets tough to grab someone. A lot of times I will have people scheduled from weeks on end, something happened last minute, so I had to scurry and get someone else on the show. There's so much going, audio, editing. I do my show live, but at the same time, there's still editing. And like you said, there's times that I don't feel like getting up. I mean, I remember I had Billy Gunn on my show, my 200th episode. I've had him on the show a couple times, but my 200th episode, I had him on the show, and I had the flu. I felt incredibly ill and just sick as a dog and just coughing. I kept pushing the mute button and coughing just so it won't air, you know, online. And now a lot of my stuff is through video as well. But it's like, you still got to do it, man. So I really appreciate your understanding of the work that it involves. As far as just your time with Impact Wrestling. Go ahead.
Hey, let me tell you this. I had Stefan Bonner on my show one time.
Okay.
And never hit record.
Oh.
And so, and this was a Skype. You know, this I was doing a Skype one. So he's down, I don't know where he was at. He was out training. No, this was right before his Anderson Silva fight, because I remember that story because he didn't have a fight.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, here's what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to put out to the universe that Stefan Bonner needs a fight. And then, like, I think it was the very next day he got the call from Dana White. And I'm not saying it had anything to do with me, but in my mind it did.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it helped him out. He got a payday, but he got his ass whooped.
Oh,
so nice.
Yeah.
I forgot to hit record.
Wow.
To hit record on the show.
Uh-huh.
And then I had to call him back and we had to do it all again.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've had a few of those, man. Just audio just picking up me and not the other person, and just had to edit it and just, oh, yeah, just so much, man. So I think out of the 101 or 102 guests I've had on my show so far, I think that you're the one who understands the most as far as just the podcast. Now, I do have people who are on my show who launch podcasts after being on my show a few times. But at the same time, I don't think that, I think you get it, man, more than anybody. And I really appreciate, your relatability when it comes to that. I cannot show you enough how much I appreciate that. So thank you. So as far as just your time with real quick, as we close, your time with Impact Wrestling, you were an on-air talent in front of the camera. You had a backstage role as well due to some injury. And then, of course, you the Helms Dynasty. And, of course, out of that, Trevor Lee is one of the premier X Division talent as far as Impact Wrestling. But recently, your relationship with Impact dissolved and you're no longer with the company. We did talk off air and you were talking about how it was more of a Jeff Jarrett thing than an Impact Wrestling thing. Just let the listeners know a little bit more in that situation.
Jeff just brought some of his buddies in, and that was his whole thing. He brought himself in, his wife, his buddies. And that created a budget issue, but it was a budget issue that he created. And because he did that, certain guys had to be let go. My contract was up anyway, so was Al Snow, so was Pat Kenny. And apparently longevity didn't matter to him. You know, I mean, he comes from a family that's, you know, they're kind of being corny, kind of in anyway, so he's just part of that lineage. And that's what it was, and it didn't matter that the people brought in weren't as talented nor successful as myself and Al and Pat were. That didn't matter. He was just going to bring in his buddies. Mm-hmm. And the second I got released, my phone blew. Everybody on that roster was talking to me because I worked really hard there. I went above and beyond my duties as an agent, you know, mm-hmm. to help people out, not just with their matches, with their entrance, with their character, with their promos. I would have guys come to me. Because I was a promo guy, you know, it's one of the things that got my character over was slapping my gums. Mm-hmm. So I would have guys, you know, come to me and read me promos. Guys asked me with help on their entrance and stuff like that. And I was just going above and beyond, you know, trying my best to help out everybody. And I caught heat because of the thing with the Hardys, because they're my friends. Mm-hmm. And that was like just not professional. It was Bush League mentality. That was just one person that I had to deal with on that. So Impact itself as a company, great relationship with them. No heat there whatsoever. I wish them all the best. I'm looking forward to this pay-per-view coming up. You know, let's see what they're going to do. I'm a big fan of Eli Drake, you know, and I told them back in the day he's going to be the guy at some point to carry this company in terms of being the champion. So a lot of guys there. I'm a big fan of a lot of the talent there. So I got nothing but respect and love for the roster.
Yeah, absolutely. I've had Eli Drake on my show a few years back, about two or three years ago, and he was just kind of stepping, just kind of, it was in his formative years at Impact Wrestling, and he was talking about his time in WWE and just his goals and impact, and now he's the champ. So yeah, it's really good to see that evolution when it comes to his career in Impact Wrestling. Let's see what I did there. But as far as just your time in Impact Wrestling and in WWE, you've got so much left in the tank. Hopefully, you've been in the business for quite some time. You've had more, you know, a backstage role in Impact, so you're really familiar with that type of role now. But you're doing more in-ring stuff now. Just let the listeners know what the future of Hurricane Helms is, and is there any chance of going back to Impact since Jeff is gone, or WWE and an agent role? Just let the listeners know what you got in store.
I mean, there's always a chance. You know, I'm back in the ring right now more than ever. Finally got over an ACL tear that took, you know, I had a corrective surgery, and there's a very small chance they could hit a nerve in there that damages the quad, but weakens the quad and really retards the recovery. Mm-hmm. And they hit that nerve on my right leg. So that recovery's been super slow. Mm-hmm. And been a longer recovery than most when they had that surgery. But now I'm back in the ring more than ever, you know, so not more than ever, but on a super regular basis. And people can find me at ShaneHelms.com on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and I post all my dates and everything like that. So, yeah, I mean, I'm having fun, too. I'm normally the oldest guy on the card now, but you can't really tell it. You know, I still go out there and rock and roll. I never call it in. I go in and, you know, I still work my ass off. So I love wrestling and always have, and that's not going to change.
Yeah. Been a pleasure, Shane. Thanks so much. Of course, at ShaneHelms.com is where you can find him, and future dates as far as him going in the ring and giving it his all, man. Appreciate you being on the show tonight.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you so much, Shane Helms, Hurricane Shane Helms, for coming on 291 episode. This is, once again, the Pancakes and Power Slam show. Thank you so much for the interview. As always, weekly interviews we provide you top notch, and we continue to give you the top show and one of the best podcasts of the entire wrestling field. Yes, I said, ladies and gentlemen, definitely not to toot our own horn, but we definitely, it all goes out to the supporters. It is all for the supporters. It all is dedicated to supporters. We thank you so much, supporters, for continuing to give us some really, really good numbers, ladies and gentlemen. Just continues 5.5 years on the show, and just the support is just absolutely overwhelming. It's all types of encouraging messages throughout the week, and just you know, we do it for you guys. We are this podcast. Is the true people's champion. So that's what Pancakes and Power Slam is all about. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get started on the show. The recap and the headlines and the analysis part of the show, ladies and gentlemen, we got the co-host, and we got our guest co-host as well. So we're going to have we have the triple threat, the ECW's triple threat of of the Pancakes and Power Slam show tonight, so I'm very excited about it. So let's go ahead and bring on the co-host with the most. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, from Under the Mat Radio, Evan Tech Proud. How are you tonight, sir?
What's going on, brother? Feel all right? How you feeling?
Doing fantastic, as always. And I'm really excited to bring him back on the show. Our frequent guest co-host, former writer, former feature columnist at Bleacher Report. Without further ado, I forgot what we named him. Oh man, he'll remember. Travis, how you
Double
doing
T.
tonight?
Double I'm
T.
Doing
that's
good.
Right. That's right.
Double
Travis
T.
Taylor. Double T. How?
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing fine.
Well, fantastic, Double T. Awesome. Great to have you back on the show tonight.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Awesome, man. You guys ready to get ready and get rolling and talk about some wrestling?
Yeah. Yeah,
wait. All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to the headlines. Real real quick before we get to the headlines, let's just recap TLC. We'll start with the guest co-host tonight, Travis. Just your overall thoughts on TLC as a whole.
All right. Well, you know, overall, I enjoyed the show, which isn't to say it was great. You know, it had some great moments. I thought the opening match of the actual show, Asuka versus Emma, I thought it was stellar. It was a great introduction for Asuka to the main roster. And I loved how the crowd was already into and behind Asuka. And, you know, honestly, I was really impressed with Emma. I felt like I was finally watching Emma at her best. You know, the match was exciting. It was the perfect length. The only downside was that it made the Alexa Bliss-Mickey James match feel like a letdown. You know, I love Bliss's character, and I really like how she can convey so much emotion with just her face in her matches. But the crowd, they weren't that into it. And I think the crowd plays a huge part in the energy of a match, especially to an at-home audience. You know, I always think back to Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne for the UK Championship and just how rabid and excited the crowd was. And it really just added the excitement of the overall experience. And that was missing from Bliss and Mickey James. Enzo Moore.
Was that in Chicago?
I think so. I'd have to double check on that.
Yeah, I think
it was a great crowd.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Enzo Moore. I think he's the best thing in the cruiserweight division right now. He's not a great wrestler, but he's infectious. He's captivating to watch. He's like a train wreck or a car crash. You can't take your eyes off of him. You know, he's that larger-than-life character that WWE loves. He makes me excited to watch 205 Live. AJ and Finn Balor was as great as I thought it was going to be. And with Angle coming in with the Shield, you know, I understand that WWE was in a bind. He was kind of thrown together, but I thought it was a great move. Love seeing him come through the crowd with the Shield, with the vest. Anything else would have taken away from the Shield reunion. And this was a smart, quick move, and it made for a great match. I just want to say on a side note, I thought it was really interesting that TLC, the entire event, there were only two title defenses, and only one of those was a Raw brand title.
Yeah, and there were no tables matches, no ladder matches, no chairs matches.
Yep,
there's one
matches.
TLC match. Yeah.
There's no stage.
You'll see your name only.
Yeah, I'll get to my analysis on it. We appreciate you, Double T, for being the very positive outlook on the pay-per-view. I've talked to Evan about it, and both of us didn't care too much about it. What are your thoughts, Evan?
Yeah, throw it to me so I can be the Debbie Donna. TLC was just like so much, as we say, DLC, downloadable content. Mm-hmm. What is going on? Asuka looked great. I thought she was wild. I was really happy for Emma because she's finally getting her shine. I just felt 205 Live, Enzo, and as I said on the show before last week, not to praise anyone getting injured, but of course he hit his all the time in sports, as we know, next man up. And all we say would be a cast turn his ACL is the best thing that could happen to Enzo, because if that wouldn't happen, Enzo wouldn't be the face of the cruiserweight division, which I enjoy Enzo. He has charisma, he has character, and that's exactly what 205 Live needs. When did Gallagher become a heel? Like, that was just out the blue.
Yeah.
He was a face, and now he's a heel. But that's what happens when WWE doesn't care much about you. They just throw you on your heel today. You're a heel tonight. No, you're a face. But the main event was just – it just was so – Angle – you and me and Featherstone laughed at this before. We know how Angle was the machine in WWE. When he went to TNA, he looked so small. And then he looks even smaller now. And this was all you saw was like his arm vein and his forearm. And I'm like, gosh, Angle got really small. Angle looked good, but the match was just, the pace was off. The only thing that made sense was Angle, of course, being air quote injured and coming back. You have Strowman and Kane. Kane looked like he was lost. He didn't know what to do. You have Kane, a heel. He's attacking Roman, so he becomes a face and does a spot. Then Strowman becomes a face from being a heel attacking Kane. Then all of the Miz team and Kane beat up on Strowman. It's like, what is going on? Seth Rollins in the corner, corpsing, not even selling his moves. He's laying down like he's in bed, just watching everything, laughing.
Right.
It's like, what is going on? And once again, WWE pay-per-view goes off after 11 p.m. So TLC, on a scale from 1 to 5, is about a T. We didn't get any ladders matches. We didn't get any chairs matches. We didn't get any stairs matches. And shout out to the stubborn, stiff-necked table. them two tables that just would not break for Dean Ambrose, that's the MVP of that TLC. Those tables that wouldn't break, and Emma.
Yeah.
Yeah, my biggest thing was that there, I mean, again, this was totally just a one-match, you know, pay-per-view. It was, that was clear. But it's like at least you could have more gimmick matches. You know, it's like Bliss and James could have been, you know, something. Could have been a tables match. If you're trying to make, if you're still trying to make Mickie James, you know, a credible name, the best thing to do is to have her lose in a gimmick match. If you had a tables match, it would protect her character because, hey, you know, I went through a table, but I still, you know, I wasn't pinned. So it could have easily been a tables match. If you, you know, or it could have been, you know, you could have had a ladder match between Enzo and Kalisto, you know, and Enzo, you know, having, you know, a ladder match for cruiserweights makes perfect sense, first of all. And second of all, it's like, you know, who wants to see just a regular, you know, regular exhibition match, you know, with Enzo Amore in it, you know. It's very clear that he's not the best in the ring, and he's
not.
You know, but you know, basically his character, is ran by his mouth. You know, his gimmick, and a lot of times that works. And he's definitely, I mean, I agree with you, Travis. He is definitely he's injected life into the 205 division,
yeah.
Certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it's like we know very well that he's not a strong person inside the ring. And
yeah.
Having him in a gimmick match makes perfect sense because it's a ladder match, it's cruiserweights, and there you go. It's TLC. It just doesn't make any sense to me at all. I don't understand how. And then it goes past. I mean, and the thing is, you could have done the chairs match, you know, with the cruiserweight tag team. And then it goes past 11 o'clock, but Elias has three segments by himself alone.
Oh,
so,
I
mean,
forgot
like,
about that. Why was Elias laughing?
Yeah,
it doesn't smiling?
Make I don't understand. And then you, and
what
then
is Jason
how,
Jordan?
How are you trying to get Jason Jordan over and he's throwing, you know, vegetables and bananas, banana peels?
There was no appeal on that Jason Jordan Elias angle.
nothing at all. And you're really trying to put him over as a single star. You're already, you know, struggling because he's getting booed. You know, the banana peel segment, it did cause a little bit of cheers, but at the same time, it's like at the end of the day, this all led to a match between Elias and Jason Jordan, which was a sleeper match that nobody cared about.
It was a match? They did
and,
wrestle?
Yeah. And then,
oh,
yeah,
it was
they never wrestled.
Legitimately,
and
I forgot. I didn't even
a
know.
Bathroom break match.
Now,
so,
literally, I went to the bathroom. I had no idea they wrestled. TLC.
Yeah. they wrestled.
I didn't even
and,
know.
And I think it was one of those things that I think that, you know, probably a few hundred other people, you know, was kind of loading up the stalls at that time, too, because it had no appeal. And if you're really trying to put Jason Jordan over as a character, that's the worst thing you can do. I understand, you know, as far as Kurt Angle is concerned, I wrote a piece about this. Kurt Angle, and we'll get to that as far as the headlines is concerned of why he was chosen. You know, if I agree with the choice. I like the anticipation was a good, you know, it was a good type of alternative. If you want to keep that type of buzz, you know, to TLC without Cena, without Lesnar, I totally understand why. I also like the fact that he came out in Shield gear because if you want to save that big, you know, the big singles return with the entrance music, although he came back, you know, with the entrance music later on the match. But, you know, if you want to save the gear, if you want to save the whole, you know, bells and whistles, I understand that. And I tweeted about that. I agree with the fact that he came out in the Shield gear because it saved, you know, it saved the money return, you know, for that big match, for that big mania. So I totally am fine with that. you know, the only issue that I have is, like, you know, what Evan was saying is just what happened to Kurt Angle? It's like it's like he's losing like a half an inch every 6 months or something like that. It just, I don't know. I mean, it just seems like he was kind of toe-to-toe. You know, I know that he's got some type of stance now. I don't know if you guys ever noticed, but his knees are kind of buckled in a bit when he stands. I don't know if y'all noticed that, but he doesn't stand like fully upright anymore. I don't know if it's an age thing. I know
so
that.
Think his whole body hurts and it's pulling him down. You know,
he's talking about
angle. Yeah. He doesn't stand fully upright anymore.
He doesn't. He, like I said, I had the honor of interviewing him about 2 years ago. Matter of fact, it was the week of the riot, the weekend of the riots that happened here in the city. And I talked to him, and that's how he is. He doesn't stand upright. It's probably because of the neck, his neck surgery.
Yeah.
Is it me, guys, or did it seem like even with TLC and even with Raw, and not to, you know, jump, they seemed like they graded like he was handicapped. Like he couldn't move like Angle. You're an Olympic gold medalist. They graded him like he's Teddy Long. So I guess the rule is, yeah, like we always, my buddies make fun of this make-believe rule, me and my buddy TB. When you're a wrestler, when you become a referee or general manager, all of a sudden your power points go down. So, like, the slightest punch or move, you automatically get knocked out cold.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
It's like...
Yeah, it didn't seem like he is a WWE Hall of Famer, you know. And the thing is, you know, you can't really say his age because, you know, Shane McMahon's just, you know, he's 48. You know, well, Kurt is 48. Shane McMahon's 47. You know what I mean? So you can't really say anything. You know,
I think it comes down to injuries. You know, honestly, like I've got a pretty messed up back, and there's some days when I feel like I'm 10 years older than I really am.
I agree.
I just think it comes down to his injuries. He's just banged up.
Yeah, I agree. I've had surgery on my back, and about to have another one soon. So I get it. I totally understand. But I think it's one of those things where, I think with his neck though, I think it's. I know that it was, you know, he broke it what, three times, you know, so, and so I understand that it's an injury thing. But here's the thing. You know, his neck, you know, we can't lose sight of the fact that, yeah, the WWE keeps marketing him as not having a match in 11 years, blah, blah, blah. But he had some pretty good matches in TNA. He had some really good matches against AJ, a fantastic match against AJ. Had a really good match against Austin Aries. He's, you know, he's had some really good matches post-neck injury. So,
yeah.
You know, and it's been, what, just a few years since he's been away from TNA? So, you know, he's had some good matches. And he can throw down. And they're going to save it for the big stage. But it just seems as – I mean, he, you know, his German suplex still look pretty, you know, tight and pretty clutch. But I don't know. It just seems as if he definitely has went down, you know, a bunch. You know, Jericho's 47. So, I mean, there's people around his age, but like you said, I agree. It's just, I think it really boils down to an injury. And, you know, at the end of the day, if he knows that, you know, he's too injured to really step in, you know, that's where I'm hesitant. You know, do you step back into the ring if you know that, you know, you're injured and you won't be able to exhibit, you know, I mean, what you really could do, you know, or just really your capacity or what people have known you to be for a while. Finn Balor and AJ Styles, I'm a little hesitant about that. It's like, you know, I think he missed the Saturday show. They were in Argentina on Friday. Saturday they were in Santiago, Mediterranean region, Chile. And I know that they were talking about, like, he had an 18-hour flight to get to Minneapolis. And it's like, man, you give your workhorse, you know, AJ Styles is the real MVP of the weekend because he flew from South America to Minnesota. They said it was 18 hours. And then he went to, what was it, Green Bay on Raw. And then he was on SmackDown. SmackDown was in Milwaukee. So it's AJ really put some miles on, you know, his body this weekend just from a travel standpoint. And they flew him 18 hours just to lose cleanly to Finn Balor. And it's just, I don't know. I'm a big fan of build. I mean, the match was good. You know, it definitely was a good match. But it just goes to show just us, all three of us are traditionalist wrestling fans. And it just goes to show how strong a build is to a match. You know, like just having a regular match. And that's why you can, you know, personally, that's why I can understand the reason why, you know, people like, you know, Booker T and Steve Austin, you know, they were willing to put people over. But they were like, no, I mean, they refused because there was no build to it. Booker T with Matt Morgan and Steve Austin with Brock Lesnar. And I can agree wholeheartedly with them, you know, and it's just, without a build, it just really, especially on Raw, you know, we'll get to Raw because essentially the Demon, you know, beats AJ Styles just to get, you know, massacred by Kane the next night. So what did it really do to AJ Styles? All right, let's get into some headlines. So spoiler alert, for those who are listening live or listening archive, there's a spoiler alert. This is penciled in. This is not fully confirmed. This is not, you know, the definite plans, but there are some speculation that John Cena versus Jinder Mahal is the penciled in WWE Championship match for WrestleMania 34. There's some talks that that John Cena may win the Royal Rumble for the third time, tying Steve Austin. We'll start with Evan this time. You know, you and I are planning on being there in New Orleans. And so we'll be, you know, it's the fun thing. You and I were sitting next to each other and had to enjoy, you know, doing some work in Orlando this year. And,
yeah,
you know, we got to witness, you know, one of the GOATs. You know, both you and I have agreed that it's one of the, or if the greatest WrestleMania of all time. You know, with Goldberg, with Brock Lesnar, with Taker, so much star power. And then the next year in New Orleans, you know, Triple H was just in an interview with when he went to India. And he was saying, you know, the goal is to make WrestleMania each year better than it was the year before. Do you agree, Evan, that John Cena versus Jinder Mahal is a better WWE Championship match than this year, which was not very good either? It was Randy Orton versus Bray Wyatt.
It's going to be worse. Modern day, yeah. Maharaja. Wait, how do you spell that? In Jinder's kids, and we call them the Jinder Juice. Is they're trying so hard to push Jinder Mahal, and it's like not working. And of course, going against Captain Four Kids, John Cena. You know, I understand the money match, but who cares? We care more about the Hell in a Cell between Bossman and Undertaker, which never happened even in WWE history. In WrestleMania,
Hangman match.
The Hangman match. No one cared, which they didn't even add in the Hell in a Cell 3 this set.
Yeah. No
one cares about Jinder. And I know Evan Bourne, and we know him. We both interviewed him. No, oh, he's a good guy. He's a great guy. I'm sure he is on a personal level. In the business, and it's not Jinder's fault. This is how they book him. And as I said before, real quick, if you watch every single title match that Jinder Mahal has had, his three against Orton every pay-per-view, his one against Nakamura on SmackDown, and his one against Nakamura at the pay-per-view, it ends in the same way. Jinder's kid, he gets beat up. Jinder's kids interfere. They get beat up. He does the ugly colossal cobra clutch slam playing, and the match is over. It's the same storyline, the same booking, and that's why no one cares. They're not booking him as a strong champion. So going against Captain Four Kids, it's not good because we all know he's going to win.
Mm.
We know Captain Cool Kid is going to win.
And like I said before, I've said this plenty of times, is just, you know, and I tweeted this today, and it just, I thought about this, and it just, this perfectly explains Jinder Mahal to me. As soon as I saw him come out on SmackDown, I said, man, this guy has I said he looks like a million bucks, but he has the charisma, or he has the character of a penny. And that's really what I believe with Jinder Mahal, because like I said before, and just it bears repetition, I can take every single thing about Jinder Mahal off of him and place it into someone else, and they could do the exact same thing. There's nothing unique about Jinder Mahal that if I took Taker's gimmick away from Taker and put it on someone else, like Primetime Brian Lee, the fake Undertaker, it would be different. You can tell that it was different. If I took Steve Austin's character off of him and put it on someone else, couldn't tell the difference. I mean, you could tell a huge difference. But if I put Jinder Mahal's character, a foreigner, an anti-American, I'm better than you, we've seen this foreign crap for years and years and decades. If I took the Jinder Mahal pro-Indian, anti-American gimmick off of him and placed it on someone else, it would mirror what we're seeing with Jinder Mahal, because there's no unique factor with him. And I think that's the biggest thing with him. Just the, you know, I know that he's trying, you know, he's had the title for 5 months now, you know, and it's like, you know, and it's crazy to believe that he's been champ for 5 months. And he's had two feuds and, you know, nothing to really help him. Travis, your thoughts on just the fact that he could, you know, for one, could carry this title all the way until next April. And just John Cena being the guy, the guy who, you know, ripped on The Rock for doing exactly what he's doing right now. And just to come back as a part-timer, win his 17th title against Jinder Mahal, who just hasn't really cut the mustard.
Yeah, you know, I'm a bit speechless on this one. Like you said, I mean, Jinder Mahal is champion. The fact that he's had it for 5 months, and the fact that he's reigned longer than both of Ric Flair's world title reigns in the WWE just blows my mind, you know? There's a part of me that wants to like Jinder Mahal. I want him because he's like a heel who likes being hated. He's got a cheat to win. He comes across as beatable, but he just doesn't have it. He just doesn't have that star power that other wrestlers have, especially if he's going to be going into WrestleMania. It's the showcase of the Immortals. It's the biggest show of the year. It should be the big name stars. I just don't know if I can handle a few more months with Mahal as champion. And also on the other side, John Cena is a big star. You know, he can carry WrestleMania on his shoulders, but I'm opposed to him breaking. He's already tied the 16 world titles with Ric Flair. I'm opposed to him breaking it, even if Ric Flair says he's okay with it. I'm not.
I don't think he is. I think that's a work. I don't think he's okay with it. Honestly,
I hope not.
He said it.
The only reason Cena would break the record
is
just to break the record.
Yeah,
he doesn't need the title.
Yeah,
I'd rather see WrestleMania something that fits in with epic matches. Yeah, even like something classic, like maybe like Cena versus Braun Strowman. You get like the classic ripped classic WWE wrestler against the big huge monster heel. That's something I want to see it on a big stage.
I agree.
You know, Jinder Mahal. He just I wish he had it, but he's not connecting.
Yeah, I agree. I think Cena and Strowman, I've thought about that match before. I think Cena and Strowman would be perfect for WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm.
In a non-title match, really. I mean, there's no need to really book Cena in a title match. I think just the kind of David versus Goliath type of thing.
They need to eat Strowman against Cena.
Yeah, I mean, I would have Cena put Strowman over, though.
Have Strowman
beat Cena clean. That's what he needs.
Yes.
By the way,
absolutely.
Guys, I would rather watch and we followed each other. My man, the master of the ruler world, Sid Vicious against Hogan again, WrestleMania 8. Then to watch some Ginger Juice against Captain Floor Kids.
Don't forget it was DQ.
Yeah, that made it worse.
The DQ heard around the world, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, that's one
of the worst WrestleMania main events of all time.
D-Works is Orton against Triple H, which was 2 minutes at WrestleMania 25.
25.
One of the best built WrestleMania matches for WWE, not since Rockin' Austin 17 and Rock Austin 19, and the match was 2 minutes.
The build was really good. You know,
yeah, the build was good.
The punning, the when he kissed Stephanie and just kind of slithered away. Just he was a really really good heel at that time, but yeah, just the payoff was very underwhelming. Yeah, perhaps a better main event is Royal Rumble 18. That's penciled in to be Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar. Here's the thing. At the end of the day, WWE is just putting all of these baby faces in Brock Lesnar's way to lead him to to lose to Roman Reigns, which personally I think that's a great idea. I mean,
yeah,
Brock
it makes
Lesnar's,
sense.
At the time, yes. Come WrestleMania, he'll be in the WWE for 6 years, and he has not lost
has it been
anyone.
That long?
Yeah, 2012. It was the after Mania 2012.
Yeah.
When he debuted, it was because it was Cena, and then Cena was expecting to come out, and then Brock Lesnar came out. So yeah, it was. So it'll be 6 years come WrestleMania 34, And here's the crazy part of it. He's lost to Triple H, and he's lost to John Cena.
Cena.
And I think that's it. I think he's lost to Taker.
Taker.
He was the controversial Taker at SummerSlam. And
well, he technically lost in the Triple Threat with Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins cashed in.
Yeah.
Technically.
Yeah, that's true. Technically.
You know, he didn't get pinned.
So four losses in 6 years. And so that goes to show, WWE is clearly wanting to put someone over by, having Brock Lesnar have his first clean loss against a up-and-comer. You know, all the losses, previously were to legends except for Seth Rollins, but Rollins pinned Reigns. So they still were protecting, Lesnar. So they want him to lose against someone. Reigns and Lesnar at 31 was great to me. I think it closed a lot of mouths. I think you had people who were very anti Reigns, and then during that match, I've watched it more than once during the match and even watching it again. I was very, very impressed with the quality of that match.
Yeah.
And I think that Reigns has, he's grown leaps
he's
and
grown.
Bounds.
Yeah, he
just,
is.
Just from
he's
a
grown.
Cadence
yeah.
standpoint, just from an in-ring psychology standpoint. So I think it's going to be even better. So I think that it will deliver.
His hair got wetter.
His hair has gotten wetter.
Wetter now.
it's black and stringy even more now. So I think it's even going to be better than it was at 31. So it's going to be a really good match. I think this will be at the end. It's going to deliver. It's going to be really good. So the end of the day, they're just putting people in the way of Brock Lesnar to set him up for Reigns, which I'm okay with. I mean, it's just one of those things that I still don't agree with him breaking the streak. I still think that was a terrible idea, especially since Reigns won this year. But at the same time, it's like beyond the streak, all his other wins makes sense. If the goal is to make Roman Reigns the person, and reportedly Roman Reigns was supposed to be the person, he was supposed to do what he's going to do in April 3 years ago. almost 2.5 years ago at 31. The goal was to make Roman Reigns beat Lesnar at 31, and it was literally a WrestleMania decision. They were talking about it in the back. They kind of pulled an audible, and they said, Seth Rollins, you're going to cash in the Money in the Bank contract. So what they're doing.
Because you saw how great Seth Rollins' run was, too.
Yeah.
7 month run. I wasn't a big fan of it. I just think him as I don't know. I just think the fact that he shut
his mouth and wrestle.
He was kind of like the American Jinder Mahal. I mean, like in a way. You know what I mean? Like he Seth Rollins is much better in the ring than Jinder Mahal is, but
he's
more
tolerable.
Jinder Mahal had the Singh brothers, and Seth Rollins had J&J Security. You know, it was the same type of concept. You know what I mean? So,
but Seth has won matches fair and square, and at least Seth, they did book him a little strong. I mean, besides the fact he used that ugly pedigree, at least you kind of felt like Seth is legit, to where, like, not like Flair and the Horseman. I felt like with Seth, you had J&J Security, and even though Flair had the Horseman, Tully and Arn, you knew Flair still was good enough to beat you fair and square if he wanted to. I felt with Seth,
I don't think Rollins really had that type of appeal. I think that there were kind of some matches. I mean, his match with Cena was good, the unification match. The match with Sting was okay.
Yeah, that never happened.
He ended the greatest wrestler of all time's career.
Hey, he can come back.
But no, he's not going to come back, man. I apologize. See, thing. I wish. I know wishful thinking is good for the soul, man. But when it comes to Sting, it's not going to happen, unfortunately. With Finn Balor and Brock Lesnar, I think it's a good idea. I mean, I just there's something about Finn Balor that's just missing to me, though. I mean, it's just
he can't talk. He has an accent.
Oh,
and he weighs 150 pounds.
That's the demon.
That's
character.
The demon.
Like,
that's the demon
with all the paint. It's 150. Finn Balor without the paint's about 137.
137. Yeah, so. the raw logo on top of the stage.
Right.
More than he does.
Right. With all the bells and whistles, with the character enhancement of the demon, which to me is losing stock more and more because you can't just. I just can't stand that. I mean, when he did it in NXT, it was like a surprise type of element. Now you're marketing, okay, well, this match is Finn Balor, and this match is the Demon. Finn Balor and the Demon wrestles the exact same way. So what is different? Like, I remember when the Great Muta was Kijimoto.
He'll
come in as the Great Muta, you know?
Yeah, or Darkness Muta.
Yeah, and he would change his whole moveset. You know what I mean? Like it was different. It was a different type of character when he became the Great Muta from Kijimoto. And if you're going to do it right. Change your character, change your moveset, change everything about you. You know what I mean? There's just something. For instance, the entrance that he does is fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to that at WrestleMania because he wasn't at Wrestle. Well, he was there. I saw him at WrestleMania backstage in the concession area.
Yeah.
But he wasn't. He didn't compete, and so the entrance is going to be fantastic at WrestleMania. But it's like, with the demon character, I wouldn't get the second time he does the arm thing. You know, he goes on top of the, he does it on the top rope. If, I think with the demon character, he should do it differently. He shouldn't do it on the top rope. You know, the first one should be on the ramp, and maybe the second one should be, like, in the middle of the ring. Something different just to create just a different character. Like, it's just not Finn Balor in paint, and that's what we've been seeing. And I think that if you keep doing that, I think that it's even going to lower his element against Brock Lesnar, people not being interested. Travis, your thoughts?
You know, I actually agree. I do think if he's going to be the demon character, it should be a completely different character. Going to turn a little bit a different direction here. What I don't like, I mean, I'm interested in Finn Balor versus Brock Lesnar. I think it's a really interesting matchup. It's going to be, you know, two different, literally two different sized wrestlers going at each other.
Yeah.
But what really ruins it for me is knowing Lesnar's not going to lose. You know, unless plans change, WrestleMania is going to see Lesnar and Reigns. And for me, because this, I really don't have a reason to invest in the match. And I get, you know, a huge part of wrestling is suspension of disbelief and in being vested in the storyline so much that, you know, you get wrapped up in the story and you have no idea what's going to happen. I just can't do that here. You know, I think Balor deserves to be Universal Champion, but I don't think he's going to get off of Lesnar. Maybe he'll get off of Reigns. The WWE can build up Balor as a legit challenger all they want, but they've invested too much publicly into Lesnar to not have him as champion. And I think this is just a case of where knowing too much of, like, the backstage politics and the backstage workings has damaged the show. I just can't get into it because I know he's going to lose. There's not a chance that they're going to take the title off Lesnar.
Yep, that's what happens, man. With you and I as journalists, it makes kayfabe tougher, and kayfabe, I always say this, kayfabe is the lifeblood of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
When kayfabe dies, wrestling dies. I'm not interested in watching a catch-as-catch-can, freestyle wrestling. I can watch the Olympics for that. But there's something different about, you know, professional wrestling that brings in the comic book type of character. You know, the comic book come to life, as I always say. And I think that just if you, you know, like you were saying, just that suspension of disbelief, that suspension of reality factor, but, you know, we know that Finn Balor is going to lose. And, you know, it'll be interesting. I think the build should be interesting to see. And this will make Lesnar a heel again, seemingly. And he's been switching back and forth this year. you know, he was the heel against Goldberg, and then he became, you know, more of the baby face against Joe, you know, come Great Balls of Fire in July. And then SummerSlam, he was more of the heel role, and then more of the baby face at No Mercy. Now, you know, he's going to be more of a baby face. I don't even know what he's going to be against Jinder Mahal. I guess
I think he's
going to
be the baby face.
Yeah, and it's like, well, and here's the thing, though. This is what hurts, you know, Lesnar just kind of still keeping that baby face role in this particular pay-per-view. I think, you know, I saw those matches at Survivor Series, and I was just like, oh, my gosh, this is going to be terrible. You have the mid-card match. And we'll get to this in a minute, but, you know, you have the mid-card matches. You have two heels. You have The Miz versus Baron Corbin, two of the strongest heels in the entire company. I mean, just like you have, you know, arguably the strongest heel in Raw and the most purest heel other than Jinder Mahal of people who don't like, at least Corbin can, you know, can go a bit in the ring. One of the purest heels on SmackDown. People just don't like him. You know, the old school type of, we just despise you, we're in slasher tires type of heel character. And you have those two people going against each other at Survivor Series. It just makes absolutely no sense to me.
No sense.
At all. Yeah. On a lighter note, Daniel Bryan lobbying for WWE in return. Evan, just your thoughts on Daniel Bryan still wanting a return. He tweeted, you know, right after, you know, Kurt Angle, his match, you know, with the Shield against the five guys, Burgers and Fries. They didn't pay me either. So five guys, you get a shout out. I'll be emailing you for my check later. So the five guys, they went against them and they beat them. And then Daniel Bryan, you know, he tweeted and said, you know, there's still a chance. And I think at the end of the day, you know, he's 36, so he still's got, you know, he's young. You know, he's still got some time left in him as far as his, you know, wrestler is concerned. And so he clearly he wants to come going back in the ring. I mean, he retired at what? He retired what? April of last year?
Yeah,
35,
34.
Yeah, so he was, his birthday's in May. So he was 34, about to turn 35. So 34 years old, retiring. Man, I mean, that's terrible. someone who loves wrestling that much. But, Evan, is there a chance?
Yeah, not WWE, because he's considered a liability. So I get WWE's corporate decision, but then I get Daniel Bryan. So Daniel Bryan contract does end, I believe, in January. So Daniel Bryan, either one of two things. He's going to hold off State of Mania. Do we have to do Axel's release? Or January come, he's not going to renew his contract because he wants to wrestle. And if Daniel Bryan leaves, this is the thing, you know, impact of TNA featuring Anthem and the Owl, whatever you call them.
OWL.
Yeah, he used to be Global Force. Sound like one of them old churches. All them names. You got whatever they are.
Right. Formerly known as.
Right. AKA, BKA.
Yeah.
BKA.
FKA.
FKA. So, Daniel Bryan leaves. How does free agent since Punk? He goes to BKA, AKA, FKA. He goes to ROH. He goes to New Japan. Helen, that's a lot of news. Because if he goes to New Japan, you already know Daniel Bryan, three match series with Okada. Daniel Bryan match with Tanahashi.
Wow.
Daniel Bryan match with Kenny Omega. Daniel Bryan and Cody Rhodes.
Wow.
That alone right there.
Wow.
That already right there heightens the indie circuit, not really, you know, the indie circuit or non-WWE to another level. So it's a win-win. Go, make a match. You already got money.
Ooh, Minoru Suzuki against Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I forgot about Suzuki. So,
yikes.
I say go. Do what you got to do.
He
go
that's five potential five-star matches right there. Wow.
And if he book it well, if he book it where he has three or four match programs with each, you're still talking about a good 2 to 3 to 4 years added to his career.
Yeah.
Now, including little spot shows like ROH, little spot shows, maybe Global Force, whatever you call them, the formerly Jarrett's promotion that Jim Cornette got kicked out of, and there's so many names we can call them. We can do a whole show on that. But, I say either he's not wrestling WWE, he's either going stay to January, leave, don't renew his contract, and wrestle. And think about that's a lot of money because everybody do Mania shows around that time. Or me, I would stay, make my Mania check, make my extra money, then ask for my release.
Yeah. Yeah. Travis, your thoughts on your main man, D-Bra?
Well, you know what? I would love to see Daniel Bryan wrestle again. I really would. I think it'd be amazing whether he was in the WWE or not. Now, I'm going to look at it a different way than Evan did. You know, we don't really know the true extent of his injuries. And the way I see it is you don't mess around with your head and neck injuries. I think no amount of desire or want should ever take precedence over your health. There's no reason why I think if he stays in the WWE, he can continue to play, you know, some big roles in the storylines like he's done with The Miz and with Sami Zayn. I don't think an in-ring turn is in his future if his neck and his head injuries are as bad as we're, you know, being led to believe. If you look at his personal life, he's got other people to worry about now besides himself, and I think it would be foolish and selfish of him if he were going to put his health and his life at risk by returning to the ring.
Yeah. I transcribed the interview that he had with Edge and Christian, and he was talking about how with the treatment process that he's doing now for his head trauma, he said that, you know, with a certain amount of more treatments, it's a lot. It's like 120 or something like that, more treatments. He can get to the point where he doesn't even there's no signs of any head trauma or CTE or anything like that anymore. That'll take some time, you know, and you know, as he continued this treatment process. So clearly he's doing all these treatments, you know, for the hope to get back in the ring. I can understand, you know, from his point, he's 36, he's got some steam left in the tank, and, you know, coming out there with the whole yes thing and just in the ring, just feeling just that energy, it has to be really tough for him, you know, to not want to do, because he would always talk about like it's therapeutic every time he would, you know, he talked about in his retirement speech when he would dive through that second rope, you know, it would be therapeutic to him, and he would, you know, it was just a high that he had, a natural high. And I think that just that feeling is still there. It's clearly still there. And it just has to be really tough for him, you know, to the WrestleMania weekend coming and just the whole build up and Royal Rumble and the surprise entrance and all of that tie, all of those elements, you know, for him has to be really, really tough. And I know that he's still, you know, he's really, you know, serious about this surgery. These treatments, and it may get to a point where, you know, he is eligible to come back. Even if it's 2 or 3 years, you know, he'll be 38, 39 years old. He'll still have, you know, time. He'll still have, you know, at least a good, you know, 4 or 5 years to really give it his all. So I think he'll be in a position, you know, because he's making it, you know, that way to be in a position to where he could wrestle. You know, even Nikki Bella says something about it, you know, in one of her interviews that, you know, he wants to wrestle again. So, you know, his family's first, you know, we all know that family's first. You don't want to jeopardize your health and being, you know, in a vegetative state, you know, when, you know, you're 50 something years old, just because you couldn't stop, you know, your diving headbutts. But at the same time, if there is an opportunity medically where, you know, he's good to go, you know, he'll be good to go. And I still, you know, I'm on the fence. You know, I think that WWE is still going to be hesitant to put him in the ring. And, you know, for a while, you know, he was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to do or say whatever I want to kind of show WWE that I actually prefer being released. But I think that he's kind of managed to fit or just kind of be in the WWE mode a little bit better. You know, time will tell. Yeah, you know, we definitely pray for his, you know, his health, you know, his first, not being first for sure. But if ever he's medically cleared to come back and WWE says no, even if he is, you know, I think that at least one time we'll see Daniel Bryan back in the ring. It doesn't have to be WWE, but we'll see him. Real quick, the reason why Kurt Angle was chosen to replace Roman Reigns was because, reportedly, WWE just didn't feel that there was any star power enough to, of course, again, the void of John Cena and Brock Lesnar being away from the Raw pay-per-view, you know, the top sell of this TLC, again, there were no gimmick matches other than the actual TLC match. So the selling point was the reunion of the Shield. Since that was going to be gone, the replacement, you know, there was reportedly no one that WWE even considered other than Kurt Angle. Now, as far as Bray Wyatt's concerned, there were other people considered other than AJ Styles. But with Kurt Angle, he was the guy. And then we talked about just how Kurt Angle was all together, you know, through the match and just his health and things like that. Travis, what are your thoughts on just Kurt Angle being the replacement? And do you think someone else, you know, could have fit those shoes to, you know, keep that type of marquee anticipation factor?
You know, I was thinking about this a lot today, and I really couldn't come up with someone that would fill the role that needed to be done here. It was a smart choice because there was so much hype and anticipation over the Shield reunion that the person they put in there had to be something or someone, bigger than the Shield reunion. And that makes sense for an angle, you know, not being in the WWE for 11 years, and since TNA doesn't exist in the WWE, he's not wrestled in 11 years. You know, but having him come down, I think with the Shield vest and with the Shield, it kept the excitement high, and it added an element of can Angle still wrestle? Can he still go to toe with anyone in the ring? I've been watching wrestling long enough to see, you know, different eras come and go and superstars come and go, and Angle has really transitioned to this, like, legend status. And I think it was a good choice. I think the only thing bigger would have been if they could have magically transported, like, 70s-era Ric Flair into the match and came down with them. That would have only been, would have been bigger. The only loser in this whole situation, of course, was Roman Reigns, because he needs the Shield to get over as a babyface.
Oh, absolutely. 100% true. I have one name I think could have been bigger than Kurt Angle, and I'll say it. Evan, your thoughts first, and then I'll say my name.
Like Travis said, Angle ain't wrestled in 11 years, even though he wrestled about 2-3 years ago. It was just good to see him. It was good to see him. I think he can go toe-to-toe. And WWE just put all their eggs in one basket and put Angle out there. I didn't think about it until you said it. It wasn't no gimmick matches, and it was all about the Shield reuniting. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm for Angle. Angle was my top five anyway. So, I think he can go.
Yeah.
I just think he's not. I mean, we know he's going to WrestleMania. We know that. So,
yeah.
I don't think he's at that conditioning level just yet. That he should be, but he will be valuable.
I hope that it's not him and Shane at Mania. I'm just putting that on the table.
Him and who?
Putting that on the table now. Him and Shane. Hope it is not.
He will.
Oh, please do not be Kurt Angle versus Shane. I don't want Shane to be a heel because it wouldn't make sense. But I'm just putting it on the table now. I don't want to see that. I think there could have been one person who could have been a bigger type of feel. You know, and you know what? I might even have, yeah. I'm set on this person. Been one person, and the person could have been Bill Goldberg. That would have been my. That would
yeah.
Be, I think that yeah. Bill Goldberg would have had. I think that he's just his body. You know, his physique is more threatening. You know, and intimidating than Kurt Angle. You know, 3-on-5 feel was a handicap match anyways. And Kurt Angle coming out with the Shield, like, Seth Rollins is not a big guy. I've been near Seth Rollins.
Yeah, he's not.
Yeah, he's just, you know, he's not. Roman Reigns is a big dude, but Seth Rollins isn't. And, you know, he's Captain CrossFit. You know, and you know, he's on the smaller frame, you know, but Kurt Angle still looks small, you know, next to Seth Rollins, you know, and it's like we need to, you know, someone who is a little bit more intimidating, you know, physically. You know, we know Angle can go. He's a legend. He's a Hall of Famer. We know that. But just that type of intimidating feel, handicap, 3-on-5. You know, from a physical appearance, you know, I think that Goldberg would have, you know, would have had a different type of element, would have been more kind of high energy, you know, anticipation. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, just the video segments and all the promos, the vignettes, all the coverage, you know, it was a good alternative. It was a good replacement because, you know, people were excited to see Angle back. So it all worked out. Raw and SmackDown recap. Travis, your thoughts on Raw and SmackDown?
All right. Well, you know what? I thought Raw was really, like, a fairly decent follow-up to TLC, and it was a nice setup for Survivor Series. I didn't quite wrap my brain around giving Finn Balor such a huge loss after his gigantic win over AJ Styles the night before. You know, Kane didn't need the win to be considered a threat to Braun Strowman or whomever he's going to face. You think it? Well, you know what? Maybe you're right. They've kind of destroyed Kane's character over the past couple of years. So maybe he did need that win.
Kind of? You said kind of? You've been very generous.
The whole hell no situation, you know, turning him into a comedy act.
Yeah.
Some people
kind
can
of
do it, some
can't. Very generous word. They've just desecrated his character.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. So, yeah, maybe he did need the win. I don't know where that puts Finn Balor. I think he'll recover and he'll be just fine. The highlights of Raw, I think, were Lesnar's answer to Jinder Mahal. He really, well, I should say Heyman's answer. He really, really just destroyed Jinder Mahal. And he did a great job, as usual.
Was that the only one who thought he was going to pass out?
Yeah, I did too. I did.
Man, what?
He's really
yeah,
excited.
Yeah.
I did too.
I'm glad he didn't, though, because, you know, Paul Heyman opens his mouth and everything becomes epic and grand, and it was just perfect. And I thought the ending of the show, the SmackDown Invasion, was fantastic. I love the idea of the champion versus champion matches. It needs to be handled the right way so that the losing champion isn't tarnished too much or seen as like a lesser version of the winner. But I loved that they invaded it. It made me feel like, you know, back in the WCW days, if it had been handled a little bit better. I generally like SmackDown more than Raw lately, but just barely. SmackDown continues to showcase a lot of their top talent, like Corbin and AJ Styles. While they balance out the heavy stuff with comedy, like, you know, all of Natty's matches. Jinder Mahal's response to Lesnar this week, and I don't know how he's going to come out of this thing unscathed. I really don't.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Evan, what is your thoughts on Raw and SmackDown?
Sadly, I didn't get a chance to watch SmackDown at all, so I have no idea what happened. I did. The only thing of SmackDown I saw was Ziggler, who was he imitating, The Rock, which, okay. Raw. Monday Night Raw, best part. Hey, like you said, Brock Lesnar is going to, no, Brock is not responding. Brock's going to stand there and jump and play jumping jacks with himself. While Paul Heyman do the best promo that we've seen in years. And it just adds to the fact of how, right, it adds to the fact of how strong and why having a manager is such of a lost art.
Yeah.
And Heyman just, no one cares about Jinder Juice and Brock. But Heyman makes you care. And because it's Heyman and Jinder Juice is booked so poorly, Brock will be the face. Everybody will cheer Brock. So
yeah.
I thought their promo was great. I love the fact that Alicia Fox won and she's goofy and crazy. The ending of Raw to me was, it was okay. It was good to see, I was a little excited to see SmackDown against Raw again, bragging rights, whatever you call it. It was good to see, but once again, one, where was Kane? Two, where was Strowman? We know Reigns was at home. We know Bray was at home. Why didn't Sami Zayn come out with SmackDown?
Yeah,
he said something to Shane. Why is Engel all of a sudden being held around like he's an old church mother? He's a Olympic gold medalist. It's like, and granted, I enjoyed SmackDown beating up Raw, and I like how they did segments. I really do. I really enjoyed that. But then Booker T to say, oh, my gosh, I haven't seen this. Yeah, and all that 20. I shout out to my Booker T. Was you not around the NWO?
Years.
You never seen this? I know you heard that from the song. I was like, really,
in my 26
T?
Years, man, I never
years.
Seen that like
that. Shut your mouth. You saw the NWO, which was a lot worse, and it was more edgy.
Right, and he was there. He was at WCW.
He was there.
Because
you got beat up. You got beat
you
up.
You got to have a short
right.
memory with wrestling. Come on.
Right.
Yeah, you have
come
to.
On.
Yeah, yeah.
Come
just
on.
Like Taker, just like Taker, Taker and Triple H and 17 never happened.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. It never happened.
Yeah.
And we're still trying to wonder how Taker decided to become Vince McMahon's pawn to face Shane McMahon. We're still
yeah.
wondering that.
Yeah,
we'll
still,
leave it alone.
Yeah, yeah. Just
yeah.
like GTV.
Wrestling.
Just do a
whole show on wrestling's unsolved mysteries.
Right.
We have tons of them. But
yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Like, come on, Booker T. And I feel it was good, but the loss of the commentary, if it was Jim Ross and
oh,
it was King,
yeah.
and if it was them hyping it up,
mm-hmm.
then I would have added more to it. And I thought the ending of the role was good, but I just thought the commentary just made it lack. It could have been so much better. Jim Ross going crazy, even Shivani or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Cole saying, oh, my gosh. It's like.
Yeah. Well, here's my thoughts. I was hoping I didn't have to pull it out today, but I was just unimpressed all the way just with that invasion. It's like you have – I can't get into people just being okay, you know, just trying to tear each other limb from limb on their regular brand, and then all of a sudden come together collectively and beat up Raw. I just to me, I think if you're going to have Raw versus SmackDown, there has to be a babyface side and a heel side. Just you know, brand supremacy, people coming together who don't even care. I mean, you know, Lone Wolf Baron Corbin was on the front line, you know, and one of the, you know, standing in the front of the pack, beating people up on behalf of SmackDown. But on SmackDown every week, he talks about how he didn't care about anything or anybody. He just wants to, you know, make, you know, win titles, and he's the lone wolf. But it just, I just can't do it. Like, for instance, with the NWO, they were a cohesive unit. Like, their point was to invade WCW to make the NWO the supreme, you know, company. And this is a real side note, because for time purposes, if the NWO wanted to beat WCW and run and take over WCW and everybody joins the NWO, then what happens? The NWO kind of implode at that time? I always thought about that. Like, the NWO's purpose was to, like, dissolve WCW. Then what happens? The NWO start beating each other up? I always thought about that. Like, it just, at the end of the day, like, if it was continued, if the NWO accomplished their mission, they would have to start beating each other up at the end of the day. But yeah, but the goal, they worked as a unit. So it didn't have that type of we don't like each other feel. But on Smack, I just can't get into baby faces and heels hating each other, and then all of a sudden, you know, coming together. And then Shane, you know, the whole thing was to make Shane's, it was just really, I mean, it's just a really weird, I mean, just this whole Survivor Series thing with, you know, Natalya and Alexa Bliss going against each other, two strong heels, two of the biggest heels on their respective brands, and then Miz and Corbin, two of the biggest heels on their respective brands in the mid card, and then you have Lesnar and Jinder, which doesn't really mean anything, and then you have Raw and SmackDown, which are baby faces and heels together. It's just a big ball of confusion to me, and it doesn't make much sense at all. So I'm just to the point where this is like the WWE's newest version of Bragging Rights, you know what I mean? And it just, and Bragging Rights didn't last very long. I wish if they would have done, if they're going to do the Raw and SmackDown thing, which I'm not totally opposed to, this is what I would have done. I would have made Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn like the SmackDown team. I would make them defiant against, you know, keep their defiance against Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan. I would say, you know, Kevin Owens, you know, since I beat you, I have authority, and you know, I'll talk to your dad, and he reluctantly said that I get to pick the team because it's the Kevin Owens show. So there's your heel. There's your heel team right there for SmackDown. I have Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, you know, whoever, whatever other team you want to put in there as far as the heels, you know. Doesn't make any sense. Although that'll probably be a good match, but still nothing. It's a nothing match. But, you know, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and three other heels that you can easily find on SmackDown, they can be the defiant team, the Kevin Owens show, SmackDown, and they could have the invasion. They can have that type of heel feel to them. And while Shane McMahon and Daniel Bryan are like, well, we don't have anything to do with this. We're tying our, you know, our hands are tied. We don't have a choice. That brings more suspense instead of just saying we're going to just compile faces and heels together and invade. And just, yeah, I just, I'm not buying it, man. I'm just not. I'm not into it. And Survivor Series is really going to be a throwaway pay per view for me. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to get into the flavor of the week. We got some. We're going to be reviewing and grading real quick. Survivor Series 87 to 90.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
Survivor Series 1987. First of all, I'll start off with the incredible, incredible theme music. I'm a big fan of I'm a big fan of Survivor Series theme
the
music.
Survivor,
I'm a
sorry.
Big fan. Yes, I was just about to go there. I'm a big fan of Vince McMahon. Welcome everyone. I love old school Survivor Series intros when Vince McMahon would always say welcome everyone like three or four times. Like it would just say welcome everyone, and he'll say the city. Welcome everyone, and he'll say something. The Thanksgiving tradition. Welcome everyone to the Survivor Series. And it, I loved it. Just loved
shout
it,
out to
it.
The bricks. They used to crash into each other. You hear me, Gene Oakland doing the voiceovers for the matches.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Blow it off the haze.
1987. The card was just a traditional, you know, a traditional Survivor Series card. And it was Team Hogan, and it was, you know, the Hogan Andre type of feud, you know, that they had. There's one thing I really liked about Survivor Series back in the day is that it was like it continued a feud, you know, with two people, you know, and basically the main event was the two people bringing in, you know, their cohorts to extend, you know, the feud that they had. So as far as Survivor Series 1987, pulling up the card here, the main event was what, Team Hogan versus Team Andre, right? Team Hogan versus Team Andre?
I do apologize for that connection. Yes, it was Team Hogan and Team Andre. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Yes, it was.
Yeah. Team Hogan versus. And that was in my home state, Richfield.
Oh, yeah,
Ohio.
It was.
Yeah, in Ohio. I don't know how long. I don't know how far Richfield is from. This is Dayton area, I think. So it's probably about an hour or so. From a cap city. So you had a Beefcake 5-on-5. It was 5-on. It's funny because the results for Survivor Series, it was 4 5-on-5, well, 3 5-on-5 matches and a 10-on-10 tag team match. So you had Beefcake defeating the Honky Tonk Man. So it was Beefcake, Dugan, Jake Roberts, Randy Savage and Steamboat defeating Harley Race, Honky Tonk Man Hercules, Danny Davis, and Ron Bass, Outlaw Ron Bass. Moolah's team defeating was it Rockin' Robin's team? I think it was. It was Fabulous Moolah, Jumping Bomb Angels, Rockin' Robin, Velvet and McIntyre defeating Don Marie. Not the ECW's version. The Glamour Girls and Donna Cristinello, the British Bulldogs winning the 10-on-10 team matches, and then Andre the Giant with his team, Butch Reed, King Kong Bunny, One Man Gang, Rick Rude defeating Hulk Hogan, Tom Morocco, Ken Patera, Paul Orndorff, and the last person on the Team Hogan, and it was Bam Bam Bigelow. I remember that. It was very interesting that they chose Bam Bam Bigelow to be the last person on that team. Travis, what would you grade that Survivor Series?
Well, if we're talking like an A through F grading scale, I would give it like a B minus, given that it's the first Survivor Series. You know, it was the biggest event since WrestleMania 3. It was the remember that was the tagline. Hadn't quite found its legs yet, but you know what? It was an interesting new concept for the WWE, and with only four matches on the entire card, you know, overall it was entertaining. It was different for its time. It, you know, like I said, it would reach its legs later on and get better. So I'd give it a B minus.
B minus.
A lot of big characters in this time, you know.
Yeah, I was about to say, for me, for it to be the first Survivor Series, I give about a B. You know, around that time, I know it wasn't super flashy, but the one thing I loved about those matches is that the match, the people got eliminated by the most random moves: elbow drop, eye rake, eye poke, drop kick.
I think it was a gut wrench suplex.
Gut wrench suplex. It added to the spontaneity because you didn't know who was going to get eliminated by what.
Yeah. Yeah. 88, we got Blue Blazer, Beefcake Brunzel, Sam Houston, Ultimate Warrior defeating Honky Tonk Man, Ron Bass, Dangerous Danny Davis, Greg Valentine. Same content, 3 5-on-5s and 10-on-10. Powers of Pain, Rockers, Bulldogs, Heart Foundation, and Young Stallions defeating Demolition, Brainbusters, Bolsheviks, Rougeaus, and Conquistadors. Team Andre defeating for the second straight year, winning. He had Mr. Perfect, Rick Rude, Dino Bravo, and Harley Race. They defeated Jake Roberts, Jim Dugan, Ken Patera, Scott Casey, and Tito Santana. And of course, Hercules, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage, Chippa, Jim, and Coco Beware, defeating Akeem, Big Boss Man, Haku, Red Rooster, and Ted DiBiase. Real quick, solid B for 87 for me.
Yeah.
Travis, what would you give 88?
88? No, I'm going to give 88 something a little bit better. I'm going to give an 88 a B plus. Just for the actually, you know what? Let's make it an A minus, simply because of the fact that this was the beginning of the end for the Mega Powers.
It's true.
You know, yeah, and this is, yeah, I consider the Mega Power storyline to probably be one of the best long form storytelling the WWE has ever done.
Oh yeah,
and this was the beginning of the end for that. So just for that fact alone, I'd give it an A minus.
Very interesting. B for me. Because I think like I said, I was a big fan of just the storylines of wrestlers kind of having their own teams throwing their respective feuds. So that's what I always loved about Survivor Series, and especially 89. It was 5 4-4s. Dream Team defeating the Enforcers. You had King's Court defeating the 4x4s. Tough Guy. You had the Hulkamaniacs defeating the Million Dollar Team. You had the Rude Brew defeating the Roddy's Rowdies. And then you had the Ultimate Warriors defeating the Heenan Family. A minus for me. I think this is probably one of the best Survivor Series, just because it was, you know, the gimmick names and just the amazing feel of just the feuds that were going on at the time. I was a big fan of this one. Evan, what would you give this one?
Yeah, I give it A minus, man. It was one of the best Survivor Series. Like Double T said, I didn't think about it. It was the end of the Mega Powers. Just the fact that Rude's team, sadly, listen to those names, that whole team but one has passed away.
That's true.
And a lot of the pay-per-views back then, you played a game against 70% of them that caught it, 80% is all went on to glory. So this was a great storytelling then. And you had team names. It was the captain and the team names. And it was now it's just all Team Raw, Team SmackDown.
What would you give 89, Travis?
I agree with you guys. 89, I'd give an A minus. I mean, it's just such an interesting card. You had such a great team. I mean, you had the Dream Team with Dusty Rhodes, and you had Tito Santana and Terry Taylor, even though he was the Red Rooster. You know, a lot of great big names. Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, the Fabulous Rougeaus. I love seeing guys. One of the things I miss about Survivor Series was seeing guys together on a team that you normally didn't see together, like the Ultimate Warrior and the Rockers. It was just a dynamic that you had back then that we kind of lost now, but a great, great show, A minus.
Yeah.
90, I loved 90 just because it was the first and only concept where the winners would go, the babyface winners would go against the heel winners at the end. And, you know, you had the Warriors defeating the Perfect Team, Million Dollar Team defeating the Dream Team, Visionaries defeating the Vipers, Hulkamaniacs defeating the Natural Disasters and the Alliance defeating the Mercenaries. And then Hulk Hogan, Tito Santana, and Ultimate Warrior were the respective survivors of their matches. They defeated the... They showed WWE what a real 3-on-5 match looked like as they defeated Hercules, Paul Roma, Rick Martel, Ted DiBiase, and the Warlord in the elimination match. Yeah, a solid A for me. I think this is probably one of the best Survivor Series that I can recall just because I love that type of elimination style match. It was interesting that, you know, there was one time that the WWE had it in 92 where the Royal Rumble was for the title and they brought it back, you know, last year. But they haven't done this yet. They haven't done the baby faces and the heels, you know, coming back together at the end, which I absolutely love. Real quick, Evan, what would you give this one here?
Well, I thought it was a B+. I really like that concept. Like you said, the when they said the you know, the survivors had to fight at the end. I enjoyed it. Some of my favorite Survivor Series is the earlier ones.
Oh yeah. Yep.
It's so stiff and it's so just old school.
Yeah. Travis, what do you got?
You know, I'm going to give this one an A as well, just for so many great factors. Like you said, I love the idea of the heel winners facing the babyface winners. You get the debut of The Undertaker. You got Demolition and LOD in the same ring. It was lots of great stuff. And I would give it an A+, but they did have the gobbledygooker, so.
Oh, yeah.
Got to take away
that
from
that. Down a notch or two. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a pleasure. I will go back in time and do some more grading of Survivor Series next week. Thank you to Shane Helms, Hurricane, for being on the show tonight. Of course, follow my boy, Double T, Travis Taylor, at Ryder Taylor on Twitter. Got some really good stuff. He writes his butt off all the time, and he's very good at it. And, of course, follow my boy, Evan Tech Prout, Under the Mat Radio, at Tech_UTMR, Under the Mat Radio, 7 p.m. on Tuesdays. And, of course, follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter and the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling.
Yes.
On behalf of Evan Prout and Travis Taylor, this is Chris Featherstone, the Pancakes of Power Slam Show, episode 291, signing off. Everyone have a blessed week. Enjoy your week of wrestling. God bless.
Thank you.
Have a good night. Bye-bye.
It's been an honor. Thank you.